good afternoon. It is 4 minutes after the top of the hour, 2 p.m. here in the Rose City on KBOO Portland. Usually handsome and romantic Ed Melnick is here with the singer-songwriter edition of the Monday Sampler, but this is old Fortunato, and who he's coming up the street. He's joining me here, DK Home.
Yeah, let me just sit down.
Okay, right.
Settling
host
down.
Of the new film at 11 that comes to you at 10 a.m.
Yes.
On Friday morning.
In a couple of years, we'll get it to 11.
But it's just starting, and it's a really nice talk about films, and you have different guests that come on.
Yes, Mona's the co-host, usually, but we're looking to have a guest at least twice a month, maybe even every
You had
episode.
A very interesting gal last Friday.
Yeah, she is a little bit of a horror expert, and Hallie talked about the 10 films that influenced Jordan Peele while making the recent hit, Us.
Yeah, so as you can tell, we'll probably be talking a bunch of movies here coming up. Let's see, if you've got a movie question, and you want to call us up here, 231-8187. If there's a question that is bothering you, call us up and we'll answer it on the air. We won't put you, we'll write it
yes.
down. If you have some sort of question about the movies, we'll give you some sort of an answer. is what we're trying to do. I'm going to start here. We're going to start off with a little Joni Mitchell.
Oh.
And Ed likes to play Joni all the time here.
Yeah.
And so stay tuned. It might be like make up a little more. Another tea or something, sit by the window. It's a beautiful day out. Nice overcast Portland day. I hope you keep listening. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Artemis Foods, offering organic catering to Portland since 2000, featuring local seasonal menus for special events, corporate events, weddings, and more. Artemis offers full service and drop-off catering. More information online at artemisfoods.com.
Thank you. In my neighborhood, where folks don't live so good now, the rooms are small, most of the buildings made of wood. I hear the neighbors talking about you and me. Yes, I've heard most every word, 'cause the talking's loud and the walls are much too thin.
somebody holds a key. Well, I'm dizzying and I just think of the time. Oh, and I'm wasted and I can't find my way home. But I can't.
You've got a lot of nerve to say you are my friend. When I was down, you just stood there grinning. You've got a lot of nerve to say you've got a helping hand to lend. You just want to be on the side that's winning. You see, I let you down. You know it's not like that. You're so hurt. Why then don't you show it? Your feet, that's not where it's at. You have no feet to lose, and you know it. I know the reason that you talk behind my back. I used to be among the crowd. Such a fool to think I'd make contact. One who tries to hide what it don't know to begin with. You see me on the street, always act surprised. Say how. Just one time you could stand inside my shoes, and just for that
just one time you could stand inside my shoes.
Got onto the bus, pointed a water gun at us. He said, I'll owe you 10 G's if you can answer this for me. What made my hamburger disappear? What made it vanish into thin air? I asked. And this woman laying up a gin and tonic from the cup. We locked and bolted up the door, a burning candle on the floor.
Whoa, 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 catastrophe. Candle lit the pillow on fire, almost roasted me.
I said, almost. Went to Dave's Deli. I gonna fill up my belly. This man sitting next to me, a heart attack, now can't you see? He said,
made my heart stop beating. Must have been some blessed thing that I was eating. Oh, did I?
Oh, we're sort of singer-songwriters here on the Monday Sampler. It's Fortunato. I got DK Home here with me today. Ed's actually working. He's working hard out there. And so he asked me to sit in here on the singer-songwriter edition. Jeffrey Fredericks with the Clamtones, or was it the Rounders? This is one of my favorite bands. This was like one of the best dance bands. Jeffrey would just get that rhythm guitar going. And I remember sometimes I'd be like, after a long gig of working when I was doing television work, the Earth Tavern was right near where I was living over in Northwest Portland. And then I had to do a shift at the Cinema 21. And since I worked at the Cinema 21, we let the people from the Earth come in the movies. And so they let us into the show. And so they're playing there. And it's just like, you just couldn't help but dance. They just had that nice rhythm. You can catch some of that at, I think, the Laurel Thirst on Sunday night.
Oh.
Some of the members of the band. They used to be the Freak Mountain Ramblers, but now I think things have changed. It's usually packed, totally packed there with all sorts of old hippies, but the music's really good. That was the question of the ages. What made my hamburger disappear? I'm telling you, I asked that quite a bit. Yeah. And did you catch the Portland reference in there, DK?
I sure did. Dave's Delicatessen.
Man, that was over on Yamhill, around the corner from where the Fred Meyers used to be downtown.
Yes.
Over on Morrison and...
About 5th or so.
6th, yeah. So it was between 5th and 6th. Mm. Was Dave's Deli. Man, they had a potato knish you'd die for. Right
there. And there was the farmer's market
yeah,
open.
There was a market, yeah, right there.
And Fifth Avenue News
up
a little bit.
Yeah, near there, yeah. All these old Portland things.
The Looking Glass bookstore was right underneath the draft board on Taylor for many years.
Yeah, block over. And you could see Bill and Katie. They would go to Dave's Deli all the time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Portland, it changes. I mean, we have times there are golden ages. Like when Satyricon was around, or X-Ray, or all the strip clubs, or something.
Yeah,
like
you get a little flavor of it if you watch the PBS adaptation of the Ursula Le Guin story.
Lathe of Heaven.
The Lathe of Heaven, yes.
Oh, yeah, they did that.
They shot some of it downtown on those very streets.
Right. Let's see, before that, I had like a whole set. DK came in and suggested this song. It just fit perfectly with this Scott Walker piece. He just passed away last week.
Yes.
I hadn't really heard him before, but that one little piece about the apartment and stuff, it reminds me of my friend Jennifer Robin, who's been on the show. She would write in her Facebook about things going on in her apartment.
Yes.
And people next door, and I thought that song fit right in with the how she's observing things now.
And he was part of the Walker Brothers.
Yeah, we'll have to dig that out.
Who had a famous hit called The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore. And about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a documentary about him because being a pop idol in England, he was an American, but he settled there and started to do really way out sound, acoustic concert, experimental music.
Wow.
Album after album of it.
Wow. We started off with Joni Mitchell's live album, Miles of Isles, with You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio. And
you also had...
Zephyr.
Yes, and then there was
Johnny Rivers.
Johnny Rivers doing Bob Dylan's Positively 4th Street. And I was just reading the other day that Bob Dylan once said that he liked Johnny's version better than his own. And
well, you can see it.
Would listen to it with great pleasure.
He's got the voice that Bob wishes he had.
Yeah.
Johnny's like a great singer. Much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Never mind. I was just thinking of something.
We thought someone was trying to get in the door here. I can't believe it. We're closed for April Fool's Day. No, we're not closed for April. It's Cesar Chavez's birthday, and it's
Happy Cesar Chavez Day.
Yes, man. We also had Zephyr. That's a sort of out of that band from Boulder, Colorado. They had a couple of really nice albums. Guitarist Tommy Bolins is kind of one of these obscure but really great guitarists that came out of that band, though he's not on that album, which is. It's got one of the great iconic 60s album covers. It's called Sunset Rider.
Mm.
And Candy Givens is the singer on there, sounding very much like Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
And she also passed away way back in the 60s. So if you can find any of her stuff, it's really worthwhile. So that was Am Not Surprised with Zephyr. Oh, man, we're here on the Monday Sampler. Let's see, we'll talk about some films here coming up since DK, who is host of Film at 11, which comes to you on Fridays at 10 a.m., there's just some paperwork that has to be cleared with the FCC, permissions and such. It's just best that the show is launched and you can catch it and
yes.
You can talk about films. I've like been going on this thing about Hercule Poirot, Agatha Christie's detective. We'll talk a little bit about it later, I just want to mention that's going to come up.
I can tell you that... the film's opening this week,
yes.
None of which I've seen, but they include Shazam.
Okay.
And you could probably explain at some point after the movie opens the completely complicated history of Captain Marvel and how it ended up
as Shazam.
And then Pet Sematary, the second adaptation of the Stephen King novel.
It doesn't have the Ramones theme song.
It probably doesn't.
There's a live version of the Ramones, and Joey's going, oh, we're going to play this next song. It's called Pet Sematary. It's from the movie, oh, yeah, Pet Sematary. It's like...
Also, opening is Teen Spirit, which is about the fifth of recent movies, dramatizations of the lives of female pop stars. One of them had Natalie Portman, and another one has Elizabeth Moss. And I'm interested in seeing all of them and seeing if I pick up any themes. And then finally, on Netflix, is the debut of Brie Larson's directorial effort, Unicorn Store, and it's appearing on Netflix this coming Friday.
That clarifies a bunch of stuff of why she's, maybe that's why she's doing the Captain Marvel movie, which, and then that, she isn't even called Captain Marvel.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that last week, and I thought that was curious, and I was like, would anybody even notice that? But then I was reading a review of the movie today in the new issue of Sight and Sound, and the reviewer mentioned it. He's like, he seemed to attribute it to the whole legal problem with the names of things, although I don't think that really applies. But no one is called Captain Marvel, although at least two women in the movie, or possibly three, could be called Captain Marvel.
Or Marvel. They have a little exchange about that. But I think that's sort of good. It's like they we don't quite have it. I think there's still...
Well, she's not famous yet, for one thing.
Maybe that's...
But another, Kim Newman is the guy who wrote the review. And you can, whenever there's a Kim Newman review, Sight and Sound makes them always do horror and special stuff. But he's so informed that you got this little history of the disputes over the Captain Marvel name from 1950 on.
Right. But for Brie Larson, I think, you know, she's going to do this, you know, commit herself to these movies. They gave her something really good, I guess, backing her to this director.
Yeah, she'll do a $300 movie and get paid a lot of money, and that will free her up to be able to write and direct a story that means something more to her as a filmmaker than a big blockbuster type thing, although I'm sure she likes being there, and she's good in the movie. But Unicorn Store is, she's written it and directed it, and it's making its debut on Netflix this coming Friday.
Well, let's see her stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see how she does. We'll talk about it a little bit later about the Hercule Poirot, and the Christie's character. And here again, it's like an early sort of series movie of how the idea of doing series movies in the big A-level movie as opposed to the programmer, the second feature, the B-level movie.
Right, like the Miss Marple movies from the early 50s and 60s.
Whereas this Murder on the Orient Express that had Albert Finney in it in 1974, it started a series of films with Peter Ustinov, and then it led to this long-running TV series. There he also did a version of Murder on the Orient Express. And then here Kenneth Branagh had done it last year. And then just a couple months ago, the BBC had a very odd, dark version of another Poirot mystery, Agatha Christie's The ABC Murders.
Or sometimes called The Alphabet Murders. Yeah. Funnily enough, an earlier version of that movie was directed by, of all people, Frank Tashlin.
I love that movie.
And if you haven't heard of Frank Tashlin, he's famous for directing some of the Jerry Lewis solo movies before Lewis took over himself. This one stars Tony Randall as Poirot.
It's the first movie I saw where I got introduced to the character, and I really kind of liked it. I saw it on TV, and I started reading the books afterwards. And of course, first I got to realize that the books are not like what this comedy was. Though I liked Randall's performance in it because I was very young. And so that started me reading all of the Agatha Christie.
I wonder if that Randall movie inspired the Inspector Clouseau movies, like the Pink Panther.
No, it comes later. It's 65.
Oh, so they're mimicking
Pink Panther.
Okay.
They're trying to do that. But here, but the idea of character movies, you know, series characters, that's kind of interesting of how to get that right. Because my main complaint about the Albert Finney movie the Murder on the Orient Express, which I saw again, and I liked it a lot more than I did initially. And
yeah.
It had to do with a part where they're all getting on the train, and the train's taking off, and suddenly the music changes. It becomes this nice waltz.
Just celebratory.
And you don't even hear the train.
Yeah, yeah.
And so on the DVD, they're talking to Sidney Lumet, the director, and he's like, oh, yeah, the sound guy was so disappointed. I thought he had a tear in his eye. And then he turned around, and he walked out, and he never came back. Well, it's like, well, what's his deal? I mean, it's like the most famous train and one of the most famous train movies, and you're not even going to have the whistle. It
yes,
just kind of shows that they were kind of holding it at arm's length in a way. They didn't really embrace a whodunit as a really involving dramatic film, because
yeah.
like that's the point where there should have been sort of ominous, because this person is being entrapped. There's a conspiracy to murder this person.
Well,
it's a train of death. As
Sidney Lumet is considered by people who follow the careers of directors to be what is called a metteur en scène. That is somebody that can move the furniture and the actors around,
yeah.
But doesn't particularly have a personal vision or an artistic
right.
vision. His strong suit is he works really well with actors. And if you compare the Sidney Lumet Murder on the Orient Express with the recent Kenneth Branagh one,
oh yeah,
and Branagh is an actor,
right?
And he's probably pretty good on the stage, but in this movie, he doesn't know where to put the actors
and he doesn't
get them to interact with each other very
that,
well.
That was another thing.
Lumet could do both those
things.
Oh, that excellently.
Is just once the movie gets going, like the first act kind of gets Quarrow on the train and introduces the character, and then there's the murder, and then Quarrow agrees to investigate the murder, partly because the man had approached Quarrow and asked for his protection, and Quarrow denied it. So now he kind of feels obliged, even though it's the owner of the, or this representative of the company who got Quarrow on this train that was overcrowded to begin with, to help him out so that, because the train's stranded in a
yeah.
snowfall, and they're going to have to bring this murder to the attention of the Yugoslav police, and they figure that it's just going to hold things up, and if, since we have this famous detective,
yeah.
he could investigate it and present the whole thing
yeah.
to him.
Save some paperwork.
Yeah, and so that's the end of the first act. The second act is the interviewing all the suspects and unfolding this conspiracy, or the reason for the conspiracy. I'm trying to be very careful
yes.
here, because it's a very famous ending that I don't want to really give away too much. But what's interesting is how these interviews move from one to the other. They're like, some of them are in the same railway car, and so somebody sits down, and we get into the interplay. And Finney and the other actors are really good in the interplay. And then the one actor will get off, and another suspect will come in. And it nicely flows from one to the other. And then there's another character who's she's elderly, so they go to her compartment. So then that changes it up.
The dynamic is a little wild.
Yeah.
And also there's something inherently dramatic about what I guess these are interviews, but they're really, in a sense, interrogations.
Yeah.
Because the detective is trying to find out something from an unforthcoming person who has a secret. And the great difficulty in writing mysteries, and apparently Agatha Christie could do this really well, is knowing when to withhold and when to
yeah.
present new information that completely changes the story that you thought you were reading. I will say
yeah.
also that another thing that... following up on your comment about creating a template for a series, this one established the template for the studio, which was to have a somewhat robust-looking supreme actor as
yeah.
Poirot, and then have a young leading man, a grizzled leading man, an ingenue, and an elderly stateswoman actress like your Lauren Bacall or your...
Vanessa Redgrave.
Vanessa Redgrave.
Well, no, she was the young woman in this one, but it was Maggie Smith
right.
and Diana Rigg.
Uh-huh.
And they maybe would have like Mia Farrell or Hayley Mills
right.
or somebody like that in it. So there was a series of films with Peter Ustinov as Quarrow that came in right after that. And they went on for...
About four movies.
Yeah, about 1988.
Yeah.
And then the year after that, the Michael Sousette series started, on British television.
And their goal was to adapt every novel and
short story. Horror
story.
And they did. Okay. And I really like their version of Orient Express. And we'll get back and we'll talk with that a little bit more. So we'll play some more music. Now you'll know not to tune a song here, because we'll talk a little bit more about Quarreau and the murder on the Orient Express and this new version of the ABC murders that came out, which it's a little bit controversial. Now I don't know which one.
If it isn't, it will be when we're done talking about it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We're going to have some tickets to give away in a little bit. I've got a question kind of in mind coming up. And this is, I hope the sound's okay on this. This was a live performance by Shook Twins over at the White Eagle a while back. And we've got tickets to the Shook Twins' show that's coming up. We'll talk all about that here on the Monday Sampler.
Thank you.
standing on the corner, suitcase in my hand, Jackson's corset and chains in a vest, baby, me, I'm in a rock and roll band, riding a suspect hat. Jackie is a banker, and Jane, she is a clerk. Both them say their money's honeys are when they come home from work. Sitting there by the fire, radio does play little classical music, the march of the wooden soldiers. Could hear Jack say, "Sis Jane, won't that baby Sweet Jane? Oh, Sweet Jane." Some people like go out dancing. Then there's other people, baby, they gotta work. You better watch me now. There's some evil mothers, they'll just tell you that life's just made out of dirt. They're pretty women, baby, they never really faint. And villains always blink their eyes. Their children are the only ones who blush. And that life, life! And life is just to die, but I want to tell you something. Anyone who had a heart, they wouldn't turn around and break it. And anyone who's ever played a part, they wouldn't turn around and hate it. They say, Jane. Game.